I'm your host, Blake Collier, and on today's episode of 88 Names Podcast, Matt Ruff and I speak to Amir Abrahamnia and Simon Rojas, CEO and Creative Director of Derooted, a company that specializes in concept-driven immersive environments and interactive brand experiences. They also have the prize place of being one of our gracious sponsors. In this conversation, we talk about what it looks like to be creative under the direction of major brands and corporations, how COVID-19 has shifted the landscape of developing immersive technology, and also DJ Jazzy Jeff. Like with all human endeavors, VR and AR technology began from a simple concept, a mere trick, an illusion perhaps. These simple ideas, whether fully explored in their time or not, opened up deeper and more fundamental questions of being, embodiment, and selfhood. When Wheatstone developed the stereoscope, he recognized what could perhaps be called a weakness in the human body when he split the right and left eyesight and then forced them to reintegrate a complete vision. What took place was an illusion of dimensions that were not actually present. They were virtual. The development of moving pictures allowed filmmakers to manipulate what an audience sees through an eyehole with flickering images. Once again, not real, and yet the physiological and psychological effects remain for the viewer. They had been transported to another place, another world, even for mere seconds. There was a sense of disembodiment that took place just as it still takes place in modern movie theaters with 3D and IMAX screens. It requires the viewer's engagement, their presence, and the moment. With each successive improvement or discovery on the road to the VR headsets we know now, the common thread is humanity behind the technology, utilizing it and giving their presence and engagement over to the experience. This deeply human endeavor speaks to some ingrained questions about why we are so intrigued with other worlds, why we want to be someone or something else for a time, and why our actual reality is not enough for our senses and imaginations. If there is one thing that can be taken away from this brief summation of the development of VR technology, it is that it requires us to be fully human, with our imaginations, innovation, our curiosities, and altruism, but also our foibles, short-sightedness, our need for what should be enough, and our deep abiding dissatisfaction with our current being. Our strengths and our weaknesses play into technology as they do with every other aspect of this world. Look hard enough at the technology you use on a daily basis, and you will see the unique fingerprints, failures, and successes of ancestors that have gone before. This is the connection that ties all technology and humanity together.
GC Records proudly sponsors this podcast. To stream or download over 20 years of music, head to gcrecords.bandcamp.com.
My first question is, first off, tell us a little bit about yourselves and how each of you found your way into the world of immersive technology, and then how did Derooted come into existence?
Of course. But first off, thank you for having us on your show.
For sure.
It's great to be here. Congratulations on your launch. Thank you. Well, Simone and I, we met about 20 years ago through a mutual friend by accident. And not later after, we started collaborating on mostly music and later, you know, into design, and went down a whole rabbit hole of open source, and we actually had a techno band at one point together, and it was three of us, and we would make our own instruments essentially, which was a tangible audio surface using fiducials. So that's how we got into the technologies through the techno band.
Okay.
And our own instruments, and later we started an agency together, which was a Derooted creative agency, and we were doing a lot of design work then, and yeah, that was the start of it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I got into it. I had originally sort of been working in traditional advertising and eventually moved into sort of more of the experiential realm, which was right around the time that Amir and I became friends and started collaborating musically. And from there, within the experiential realm, when there was sort of like the big economic turmoil where all the car companies were affected, I worked at an ad agency that did a lot of work for General Motors, and so we were heavily affected. We sort of identified this opportunity to create new experiences, and we sort of thought the way experiential marketing was being done by traditional advertising agencies was sort of falling flat. You know, most of the experiences entailed a lot of tchotchkes, a lot of logos being thrown in your face, and not a lot of genuine experiences that created memorable events that people vinculated to a brand and said, okay, yeah, you know, like I had a great experience. These were the memorable moments, and it was all because of this brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we originally started out as a graphic design firm, and we've been open now for a little over 10 years. And we sort of focused on that. But underlying, we were always doing things with interactive technologies, a lot of emerging technologies. One of our first opportunities was with Nike, specifically Nike Real House. They produced a short film that was showcased during the Toronto International Film Festival some years back. And we created a dynamic DJ booth for DJ Jazzy Jeff to perform.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah, it was super cool. And it was the first chance where we had this opportunity to sort of have carte blanche and say to the client, Nike in this case, and say, look, your traditional DJ booth looks like a table with a banner and it doesn't complement the show in any way or form. And here we have this technology, and specifically projection mapping, that allowed us to map content onto this dynamic surfaces. And make the content responsive to the music that DJ Jazzy Jeff was playing. And so colors would change, it would bounce and manipulate based on the music that he was playing. And so people saw this correlation between the audio and the visuals. And so everybody would, you know, it's sort of the first few days of like people putting out their phones and recording what was happening, because it was an overall immersive experience that really tied everything in.
Oh, that's very cool. So on your website, you have a pretty significant list of services under your tech stack title. These are all the services you provide to your clients. Your company has headquarters in four different cities as well. So how many people work for your company as a whole, and do projects get transferred between headquarters, or does each city focus on its own region? Basically, like how does the meat get made?
the core of the company is about 10 people, 10 staff.
Okay.
And but we get, again, doing projects as a scope enlarges, so does the team in that sense. Our headquarters are in Toronto. That's where we are. That's where we started out. And this is where pretty much the meat and potatoes gets done and gets exported. So our teams in the other cities are, you know, they're there for the sales and for representation mainly.
So one of the challenges of deploying immersive technology in public is, I guess, making sure that everybody knows what's going on. And, you know, in 88 Names, I had a bit about an alternate reality game that, as part of the gameplay, makes threatening phone calls to your house, which, you know, is fun until your clueless roommate picks up the phone by mistake. And historically, there have been cases of viral and guerrilla marketing campaigns going awry because people didn't recognize them for what they were. Like there was a case in 2007 in, I think, for Aqua Teen Hunger Force, where they had this guerrilla marketing campaign where they put up these LED signs with characters from the show. And somebody in Boston didn't recognize us for what it was and actually called the bomb squad, and it caused this big mishigas. And so I'm, you know, this is the kind of thing that, as a novelist, this is fun for me to think about, because I love it when plans go wrong. It makes for great drama. But I know that for people whose livelihood depends on this, it's not necessarily nearly as much fun. And I'm just wondering if this is the kind of thing you guys worry about or have had experience about, or are your immersive experiences self-contained enough that it's not an issue?
So we find ourselves in sort of a couple of places. One, we have very contained activations that happen at private or semi-private events or inside retail, so having retail activations, so where people sort of know what's going on. That being said, we also find ourselves in the other camp where we do things that are more on the guerrilla side. I think where we've always landed is we tend to tell as many people as absolutely really need to know. So, for example, we did a really cool campaign for Disney for a promotion of Pirates of the Caribbean 5. And what they wanted to do is create something really cool, immersive, sort of non-expected. And we put a tall ship in the Toronto Harbor here in Toronto, Ontario. And we projection mapped and made it seem like it was being attacked by pirates. So like with cannons being hit on it, with like smoke machines, fire being projected onto the sails. And we most definitely received, and the authorities did receive calls of people saying, hey, what's going on? And the main thing here was is that we made sure that the people that needed to know, the authorities, the police, the port authorities, and because we have an island airport, also the airport traffic control, all of those people were in the know. They knew what to expect. And so the general public, we wanted them to have that sort of surprise moment, and have them wonder and have them go online and spread rumors of what's going on and what they think. But as long as the authorities, the people that sort of would have to deal with it at the end, knew what was going on, they were able to write it off and sort of calm those few voices.
I guess it helps too that you're in Canada. That might not play nearly as well in New York Harbor, but
yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, it'd be one of those things where the British are coming again. Yeah.
There's a recycling facility next to where we were shooting that evening, and the next day, I'm not sure why it was in the end, the entire facility burnt down. There was a fire there. So.
Oh wow!
We didn't have any pyrotechnics. So yeah,
no pyrotechnics. All projected fire.
Oh yeah. Wow, man. So a good number of the clients you showcase on your website, like you said, Disney and Nike are pretty big names. What does it look like to develop immersive concepts for corporations like that? Are they so big that there's a lot of room to play with concepts and be creative, or is there a significant level of quality control in order to maintain that brand name, that look, or that style?
I think it really depends on the specific projects. Mm-hmm. We've done things for Nike, sort of Jazzy Jeff, where there was a lot of liberty to do what we wanted, what we thought. You know, they heard our initial vision and said, okay, you know, we're with this. They gave us brand assets, and so it was relatively easy to stay within the confines of the brand limitations. And then we have other clients, much bigger luxury clients, which the relationship is one-on-one. Like there's no agency in the middle sometimes. Mm-hmm. In these cases, we're direct with their top executives, and are making one-on-one decisions with them, creative decisions. So there we have great flexibility to go anywhere and to envision anything. They know that we produce an end product that is of their standards. So they sort of give us that free canvas to do whatever. And with that, we also get really excited, and we sort of like over propose and propose more ideas than we normally would, which gives them an opportunity to sort of choose between things.
So this is our first podcast episode to be recorded from quarantine. It was sort of on the horizon on a couple of the other episodes, but this is the first one we're in lockdown. And the obvious question is, how has the pandemic affected your business? You know, on the one hand, being in tech probably makes it easier to work from home. But on the other hand, being in advertising is tough when much of the economy is shut down. So how are you coping with it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's got its challenges. But like you mentioned, being in tech, we're kind of, I mean, I always joke and say, you know, like I've been in self-isolation for years. And, you know, so it's a good time to, for us, I think it's tough as a business, but we are at a position where we are good, thank God. And it's a good time to pivot and, you know, take this time and really get down on research and development for us. I think that's our main focus right now, which is, you know, again, it's kind of a win-win situation because I guess running a company for 10 years, you know, you start off with one thing and you end up somewhere else. I've been complaining for years that I don't have enough time to actually sit down and nerd out and do research and development. And I think, you know, this is kind of a blessing for me in a way. I mean, I guess we're making the best of it. But yeah, research and development is definitely where it's at.
And that leads naturally kind of to my next question is if you had any thoughts about more lasting changes that this may have on the way we work going forward. Like, because I can't go on a regular book tour. So I've been doing a lot of online and remote events more than I probably would have otherwise promote my novel. And what's kind of surprising me is that I'm actually really enjoying it. So, you know, like last week I did a book club panel in Second Life with a group of other authors. And, you know, it was conceived as sort of a quarantine activity, but it was also really fun to do. It was really well attended by, you know, virtual standards. And it was a lot easier to put together than an in-person author panel. You didn't have to, you know, have all the logistics of bringing people in from four or five different locations to, you know, for a 1 hour thing. I could definitely see continuing to do events like that even after it's safe to travel again. And so I wondered, you know, what your thoughts are about how this is going to change things in the future.
It's definitely going to make a lasting impression, I think. I mean, I think a lot of people, this has forced people to look at things differently, right? To look at environments differently. And that, you know, that totally steps into the whole immersive environments as well. Like you just mentioned, we're seeing more and more things online happen online. And people are adapting to that. I mean, there was always a certain smaller percentage of people that were very adapted to it. But I think now it's, you know, you get a big chunk of people that you weren't expected to get on that, and they're on it now. So I think that's going to last. And, you know, for us, it's our pivots are, you know, it's, I think we're going to see less and less in touch and more into other sorts of immersive. So, you know, it's a changing environment, changing world. And there's a lot of changes that I feel like, you know, are good. I think that it's going to, you know, a lot of good will come out of this in the end.
A lot of your immersive stuff, though, actually is sort of, I mean, I was looking on your website, a lot of it does seem to involve people together in the same physical space. But you can obviously adapt to stuff that doesn't necessarily involve that if you need to.
Absolutely. I mean, I think those are actually, there's a lot of concepts that we've had for years. But I think sometimes people have shied away from it because it didn't involve people, you know, in the same room almost. So I think that, you know, it's a good chance to go back and revisit some of those ideas. And, you know, I think there's going to be more people willing to listen to some of the older ideas.
So coming from y'all's experience as a company, what do you see as immersive technology's most beneficial contribution to the world? And then where do you see potential negative outcomes due to either bad actors or just unforeseen effects of technology on the populace?
I think one of the big benefits is in the world of storytelling. Mm-hmm. We were in Vegas a couple of years ago talking to the university there, to the 360 film students. And one of the big things of what we were talking about is that, you know, through things like projection mapping, all kinds of LED technology and things like that, the canvas for telling stories has really changed. You know, we really have to break away from the rectangular 16:9 kind of ratio, whether it be on your screen on the wall or in your phone or on your tablet, whatever it might be. It's still a screen, right? And I think with things, the technologies that we have out there, we can put stories in environmental context, tell historical stories, for example, on the buildings and in the areas where things happened, advertise within context, which I think is one of the big things that's missing. And I think maybe, you know, to one of your previous questions, this will be a way where people, advertisers, will have to sort of rethink. You know, right now, if you're advertising like you would prior to COVID-19, it's kind of a null point. You have to take into account that people are sitting at home, that they're confined, that they're not going anywhere, that they've got kids at home, that they're homeschooling for the first time. Any of these kinds of things that you need to take into account, because that's a person's environmental context now. I think, and I hope that's where things change, so that advertisers are telling stories. Storytellers, whether film, animators, musicians through music videos, whatever it might be, that they're telling stories within context, that they're telling stories in different ways that really break outside of this traditional frame that we're always going to. Negatively, I don't know. I think one of the things we're always against is technology for the sake of technology. Mm-hmm. You know, like people came out and, you know, from back in the day when Flash came out and everybody had a Flash website, because you had to, you know, and it didn't really serve a purpose half the time. It was just because. And then the same thing with parallax. And then when you move into things with interactive, you know, like people are like, oh, okay, just put a Kinect in front and make it interactive somehow. Or, you know, you give people an Oculus and make them have a Google Tilt Brush experience. And as great as Google Tilt Brush is as an application, that says nothing about your company, your product, or what you're trying to advertise and the type of experience you're trying to have, you're trying to give to people. So I think it's really important to sort of stray away from that technology for the sake of technology. And I think that's sort of one of the biggest negatives that I see in rising technologies for immersive.
Yeah, so that makes sense. So you're basically saying that making it to where technology is thoughtful in how it's used. It's not just there for the sake of something new, which is a lot of the general populace. A lot of times will like say get a new iPhone just because it's the new iPhone, but not necessarily because they need it or they have an actual purpose for it.
Exactly.
And so I could see how that's fitting into your idea of how of storytelling, is that it needs to feed into the actual narrative of the story and feed into the actual meaning behind what you're trying to do. So I think that's a good way to look at the negative side.
Yeah, we've always been very concept driven, right? Mm-hmm. So it's about concept, coming up with an idea and then using technology as just a means to execute something,
yeah.
To execute an idea rather than, you know, just doing a VR experience for the sake of a VR experience.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I always like to close on is just asking people what they're working on next. But maybe because we're kind of all in suspended animation right now, what I should ask instead is what you would like to work on next. If you could have your post-pandemic wish, do you have a dream campaign, like either a company that you'd really love to work for or a particular style of immersive marketing that you haven't had a chance to play with that you would like to? I mean, you sort of touched on that already, but I'm just, you know, feel free to go further with that.
Well, there's the things that were currently in development and research and development. A lot of it, which kind of ties in nicely with what's going on, which has to do with interactive technology for purposes of advertising and point of sale that don't require people to necessarily touch anything, like touch a tablet or anything like that. So that's one of the big ones. We did a campaign last year with our partner company, FrontRunner Technologies, for Grand Marnier. And what it was is people had a binaural experience at a window front. And so using NFC or QR, people could tap or scan the code with their phones. And then on their headphones, people would listen to what was going on. And it was a binaural experience of a bartender making a drink for you right there. So taking into consideration that there's a large percentage of the populace out there with headphones on, listening to podcasts, music, whatever it might be, and then connecting them to the advertising and sort of, again, immersing them into something that they thought wasn't really possible to get immersed with, you know, like billboards and stuff like that are pretty flat in terms of experiences. And so, you know, you're looking at a digital window front. The content is there in front of you. The bartender is at human scale making a drink for you, and then you're having this audio experience. So those are the kinds of technologies we're focusing on right now and have been in development in the last year or so. But I think moving forward, and I'm sure Amir has different projects that he would love to work on, but one of our big things is staging. We feel that the world of staging has really sort of changed. The concert experience has really changed, and there's an opportunity to immerse people in ways that there's very few artists that are doing it. And so that's sort of like on the bucket list for sure coming up.
That is it for this episode of 88 Names Podcast. If you like the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and review, which will help us get more listeners. Remember to check back at the podcast site at riseupdaily.com/88namespodcast for the podcast introduction and upcoming written interviews and articles. We would like to thank Threaded Zebra Agency, Alt Space VR, Derooted, and Creative Mornings for their support and work on this podcast. We will see you soon.